Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, November 6th, 2014. It's just before 3 UTC as we start to record this. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
Oh, yeah. So
And Sam sounds terrible.
Thank you. I try.
I mean, he is sick, you know.
Again, I had like a week that I was feeling better. Maybe two. I forget.
I had a couple of days earlier this week. I thought I was... I actually came down with a little bit of something. But apparently, I guess my immune response was good enough. And I felt bad on Sunday evening. And then Monday all day, I felt like crap. And Tuesday morning, I felt bad. And then something by the afternoon on Tuesday, I was feeling fine.
Well, this has been less than 24 hours so far. So I'm hoping that this isn't a two-week thing like the last one. So, like, you know, and also there were aggravating circumstances. We'll talk a little bit later. I launched my election stuff, but in order to do that, I pulled some long hours, and I wasn't getting the sleep I should have in the last couple days. In fact, last night I didn't sleep at all, really.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, but then, you know, because I was trying to get everything done, but then Alex got sick, and so... you know, instead of finishing up everything I needed to finish up at a reasonable hour, I actually spent a decent amount of time going back and forth with Alex because he couldn't sleep and he was up and he was coughing and blah, blah, blah. And so I ended up staying up all night between him and finishing up my stuff. And, you know, and so... I only had one thing for work today, and it was a phone call, and so I called in. Well, it was it's normally an in-person meeting, but I was able to call in. So I called into that, and then I did some work from home in the morning and helping watch Alex and stuff like that. And then a little bit afternoon, I just was like, okay, I'm done. I crashed. I tried to go back to sleep. Of course, now by that time, Alex didn't want to sleep anymore. And he was like, why the hell are you going to sleep? It's daytime. And so I didn't really get any. So anyway, for a while, it was hard to distinguish. I'm like, am I getting sick? Or is it just because I've been awake for 36 hours?
Right.
You know, but at this point, I did take a nap. I slept a few hours in the afternoon. And I am pretty sure this time I am actually getting sick again. Because I got this nice cough going on. It's very similar to the symptoms Alex had last night. And, yeah, it's like, I just You're got sick. Over this shit.
You're sick. You're sick.
Again.
You're sick. Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, we're going to talk about election 2014. We're going to talk about election 2016 because I launched my new site, goddammit, and I'm going to talk about it for a little bit. We've had the failures of the two space related things, the rocket and the spaceship two. Excuse me, as I continue to die. That's going to be plenty for an agenda for today. The only other thing I wanted to note, just as an off thing, and I don't know that this is going to last, but if you remember a few weeks back, I actually took a week off to work on projects at home. I worked on the election stuff. I did some other things around the house. I, you know, built some shelves for my office, stuff like that. And for that week I took off, I actually removed all my work email and stuff from my handheld devices, from my iPad and from my phone completely, so that I wouldn't be distracted by it. I said, you know, I'm on vacation. I'm not going to look at work stuff at all. This is going to be a real vacation. I'm not going to be like checking in with work, you know, a couple times a day or whatever. I'm actually going to, you know, be off. And I've been back, but I haven't put my email back on my devices yet. And I'm just, as an experiment, I'm seeing how that goes. Because, like, you know, these aren't company-supplied devices or anything. They're my own personal devices. And, you know, my current job description, I mean, it's been different at various times in the past. But right now, I don't actually have anything I officially, you know, am, like, on call 24/7 for or whatever. And if anything really comes up, they can always call me. And so I'm like, let's try this out. Like, if I'm at home... I'm not looking at my stuff. And the biggest downside, of course, is that means my calendar and stuff is only on my laptop.
That's it. The calendar is irritating.
I mean,
at least you want to know where the hell, when and what you're doing.
I mean, that's the biggest annoyance right now. And I mean, I suppose you could set it up so you have your calendar, but not your email.
I think you can. I'm actually pretty damn sure you can.
You can do that. So maybe that's something to consider. But that's the biggest irritation, of course, because, you know, that means, like, for instance, you know, I'm going to bed tonight and I want to know when my first thing of the morning is. Right. I can't just look at my phone.
Yeah, you got to freaking open your laptop.
I have to open the laptop. So I don't know how long this experiment will last, you know, because... Yeah, and obviously the other thing is sort of the culture and expectation is built up that, you know, you do have this stuff around all the time, you know? I don't know. I most of the stuff I'm dealing with is not the kind of stuff that's time sensitive at 10 p.m. And so I don't know. I'm giving it a shot. Like the calendar is a kind of pain in the ass. So maybe I'll just add the calendar back. That's an idea. But it's an interesting experiment. Because, you know, I talked earlier about the possibility of having a separate device that I put the work stuff on. That's also a possibility. But it requires having the second device handy and, you know, carrying two things around. And that's kind of a pain. But we'll see. It's an experiment. I'm just trying it out. And I fully expect at some point it's going to burn me. At some point, something is going to come up. And I'm going to want to respond to it or deal with it quickly. And I'm going to be like, damn it, I can't. It's not on my phone. And I have to, like, go find a laptop and go get connected and blah, 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 and it's not going to be handy and whatever. But we'll see how it goes. Interesting experiment.
Well, here's the thing about that. I'm, like, right now debating about... They sent me this thing where they wanted me to install some MDM software on my phone.
I don't even know what that is. What's that?
Mobile device management software.
Oh, right. Of course. Yeah.
Okay. And they sent some terms and conditions about it, but they were very thin. Can I be honest? They weren't very clear. And I'm totally, like, right now debating whether I want to do this or not. And if I now the thing is that they can, for example, they have offered to give me a phone.
Right.
It's not like they have, but I really don't want to carry two phones, can I be honest?
No, and I understand that, but I just, over time, I get so, I know the big trend is bring your own device and all that kind of stuff, but I get a little antsy about the idea of giving any level of control to my employer of my personal device.
I know, which is why I'm like, and I don't want to have two phones, but, oh no. I may wind up getting a damn second phone, and I'm not going to be amused by that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, a lot of people are like, you're being paranoid, blah, blah, and I'm not being paranoid.
I'm not being paranoid. They're putting like software on my phone to control my phone.
Right, and I mean...
Right now,
it's not like I think that they're going to... You know, my work is going to do anything malicious or untoward. However, there are a couple things. One, they're putting restrictions on my phone intentionally on things that they don't want me to be doing. And I know the official... Yeah, we talked about this before. The official use policies for devices say, you know, there are a lot of things you're not supposed to do. Because, like, you're not supposed to back certain things up to the cloud. You're not supposed to do this. You're not supposed to do that. And it's like, well, but those are significant pieces of the functionality of my phone.
Right.
You know, and I don't want to give those up. And I also don't want to, like, you know, pretend I don't know the rule and like violate my work's policy on stuff. And of course, if they introduce, you know, management tools that force the policy, then, you know, I have no choice. I have to give up functionality in order to do the work stuff on my phone. And it also does, you know, there is always the danger. Well, I shouldn't say danger. I mean, I don't expect this to happen either, but whenever you're giving somebody else, like, one of the capabilities that they always have in the remote management stuff is the remote wipe feature, right?
Right.
And, you know, I frankly don't want them to be able to remotely wipe my device. I mean, like, I think that there's... Yeah, I could understand if they had something that could specifically come in and take out their stuff. You know, like, take out your work email, take out your work calendar, blah, blah, blah. You know, so they fire you and boom, that stuff's gone from your account right. or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, that's somewhat reasonable. But most of these functionalities, as far as I know, don't have that level of granularity. It's just
kill the device. The management software I got, if I was reading the agreement, it said... The ability to remove company information right. from your phone. Right. It actually specifically said that. But what it didn't state was... It didn't state explicitly what they could do with my personal information. It just right. it just didn't say anything at all. And I'm like reading the agreement, I'm just like, you know, I don't really... Not particularly all that happy about it. And I guess they actually gave a deadline. They said that if by this date I didn't install it, they're going to cut me off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm actually going to wait till the deadline and see what the hell
yeah, happens. I mean, and like you said, you don't want to – you don't expect – like you have a good relationship with your employer. You don't expect them to intentionally do anything bad, but they could screw something up.
Oh,
And also the one thing that we've – you know, over the last couple years, both between, you know, revelations of what various private companies are doing and the NSA revelations and everything else, one thing that if anybody has not fully internalized, really it's time to wake up – is that pretty much if the terms of services allow it, they're doing it.
Yeah.
You know, so like...
Or they're very likely to do it.
They're very likely to do it. So you don't want to say, well, you know, sure, they could do this, but they would never do that. No, if they have the capability of doing it, you should assume that they are. You know, and you should make your evaluation on whether it's okay for you to do whatever you're doing. Use the software, run something on your phone, participate in a program, whatever. You should make your decision on the assumption that they are taking full advantage of absolutely everything that's allowed to them, and quite possibly a little bit more, because they always stretch those definitions, you know, and interpret things in ways that are to the maximum latitude of, you know, whoever the other party is. And if you're okay with all that, fine. But if you look at all of that and say, well, you know, I don't really want them doing that, then you shouldn't do it at all. You don't jump in.
Agreed.
You know?
Well, I just, by the way, just as a side note, I just was going through my phone because somebody called and complained that my voicemail was full. And I was just like, I wish all my voicemail messages were transcribed. Can I be honest? I don't want to really listen to them. I just want to read them. Okay. It's a lot easier. But I had 100.
There are services that do that.
I know there are services that do that. I just want the damn phone to do it by itself. I actually, I do have a service for something else for that. But I had 145 voicemails.
Nice. Nice.
That I just deleted. Okay, all right. I figured that's 100. Jeez, I'm like, really? 145 voicemail messages? Oh, boy. Well, if I add that to the fact that my mail inbox reads 1,439 unread emails, good God almighty.
I've actually been... keeping up with my work email lately.
Now, of course, so bombarded.
That's very aggressively using rules to file away all kinds of crap.
I have rules, and even despite that, I have very aggressive rules. Let me put it this way. One of my most aggressive rule is the fact that I have any email in which I am CC'd on.
Goes away.
Just goes straight into another fucking folder.
Yeah. No, I
I don't even want to look at this shit. Okay, all right. I'm just like, oh, well, why didn't you read my message? I'm like, I go, people, you fucking copied me on it. That's not to me. If you just copied me on it, I figured you're just informing me about it, so I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's what most people do. Haven't you been in these email blame storms where people are going back and forth 30, 40, 50 emails over some freaking subject and you don't even care about what the hell they're talking about?
Sometimes.
And they're all replying to all on this damn thing and there's 50 of them and I'm like, really? When I used to leave those in my inbox, I would miss real emails I had to read because these morons were going back and forth on shit.
Well, the one thing, I haven't eliminated CCs, but I have... Yeah, basically anything, you know, mailing lists and that kind of stuff all gets filed. If I'm not explicitly on either the two or the CC, I don't even see it. If something comes up and somebody refers it to me, maybe I can go looking for it, but I don't look.
Which brings my current subject. Listen, there is a bug in Yosemite. All right.
Oh yes,
that I have. I don't know. If you don't have server-side junk mail filtering, I relied on the client side pretty much entirely for my junk mail filtering, mm-hmm. Okay? And I actually leave my mail client on all the time in mail so it would filter my junk mail.
Right, I do okay? The same thing, yep.
Well, I don't know about you if you haven't noticed this, but the junk mail filters on Yosemite are not working at all.
I have not noticed any difference from what was going on before. Now, I have some other rules in place, too.
Okay, like, if you have other rules, those rules are working. However, if you look, there is nothing ever being tagged by Yosemite as junk.
I don't know.
None of it is being moved automatically into a junk
folder. Have you Googled and stuff? All other people are having this problem too?
Yep. Yes. Okay. As a matter of fact, no. It gets better than that. I actually called Apple support and I told them about this. They basically came back and cryptically said, well, you're going to have to really rely on server side junk mail filtering. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean? They really didn't give me a very straight response. There may be an update later
to correct. Right.
I mean, it's not okay. Now I have you don't have your email through iCloud.
Well, I do have iCloud email, but it's not my primary email.
It's not your primary email. My primary email is on iCloud, and the problem is that iCloud at the server level really does very little junk mail filtering. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, and so. If you have that, I mean, like right now, I am just getting nothing tagged as junk. I mean, nothing. I have, you know, I was on the phone with Apple. We tried because when you tag something in mail as junk, it's supposed to next time that sender sends in something, it goes straight into junk. Doesn't work. Doesn't matter. We tried. Tried many times. There is a very long thread on one of the Apple like community sites with people just flipping out about it. I'm just not the only one. And there just has not been a solution to it. So, yeah, I mean, and right now this has been going on now for weeks. And my inbox is just fucking bombarded with shit.
Well, you know. The one thing, especially
the damn election, for God's sakes, there were so many. Good Lord, I didn't subscribe to all these emails. I don't understand where the fuck all these different groups got my damn email, for God's sakes.
Oh, the politicians sell that stuff back and forth.
Oh, shit, dude. Every single one of these has my fucking address. Good God almighty. How many damn emails I got about the election? I mean, oh, my God. It was just brutal. Thankfully, the election's over, okay? Mm-hmm. At least from my junk mail perspective, because I'm ready to pull my hair out of how many damn messages I'm getting this stupid election.
You still have hair?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good.
Al, I think, is, you know, running low on that quotient, like, right now.
But. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I haven't noticed that problem yet, but I do have server side filtering on my on my main account, and I have a bunch of other rules.
That's why you're not noticing it that much, because you have a lot of filtering on the server side.
Yeah, I'm filtering on the, and also on the client side, I basically have a rule that says if the address is not in my address book, file it into another folder.
Yeah, I barely look at. Right, and you created that as a rule because you know, you can do that with the junk mail filter where you select that, but that filtering from the junk mail by just picking that as the setting, which is how I had it before, just doesn't work. Doesn't do anything.
Nice. So the one thing I was going to say on this is, if this is something they intend to fix in an update, we haven't gotten the first Yosemite update yet. That usually comes like a month to 2 months after they release things, unless there's something.
Yeah, well, I hope the fucking update comes soon, for God's sakes, because I am just really fed up with this damn email situation.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Okay, I think we're ready to jump into real things. We're going to take a break. And we'll come back, and we'll start off with the election that just happened.
There was an election? Really? I hadn't heard anything about it.
Nothing at all.
No, I got no emails about it at all.
Of course not. Back after this. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes. You heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, I think I do okay. But, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you will definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. Okay, election 2014. So the one thing I want to say is there was something I actually had on my mind to mention on last week's show, and then I realized after the show I hadn't, and so I tweeted something about it on Sunday. But that was specifically that the pattern that I noticed in 2012 with polling was not a bias towards Republicans or a bias towards Democrats, but a bias towards being close. And if that pattern continued, then I was like, if that pattern continues, then everybody had the advantage to Republicans, but it was like 60-40 split, 70-30 split, things like that. But if in fact the polls have a consistent bias towards showing races closer than they really are, that meant it was going to be, the Republicans had a pretty good lock. What I posted on Sunday was I thought Democrats having a 25% chance of retaining the Senate was a bit high. And, who knows? I mean, that 25% represented some odds of the polls being wrong in the other direction. But of course, what we saw was nobody was really surprised that Republicans took the Senate. I mean, we've been talking for weeks, the Democrats were the underdog there. But what everybody has been surprised at is the extent of the Republican victories. They didn't just take the Senate. They took it decisively. They won all kinds of governor's races as well. Okay. They won all kinds
Can
of...
Explain to me one thing, because I'm trying to understand decisively, because I keep trying to understand how many seats did they wind up. But I understand they got 52 in the Senate.
I think it's going to end up more than that, like at 53 or 54.
53 or 54. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then before they had how many?
47, 48, something like that.
Was it only 47, 48? I thought it was 44.
You thought it was 44? I don't know. I don't have it in front of me. You're quizzing me on stuff.
Oh, you think?
It's not like we talk about this and they're expected to know what the hell we're talking about.
Oh, that's right.
I just make this shit up.
I was trying to get some good numbers on it. I got to be honest with you. Most of the sites were not very good. It just told me, hey, how many did they have before? What the hell was the change? I mean,
The net gain so far is the Republicans gained seven.
Seven.
And they lost none. So net gain of seven, but they actually lost no seats and gained seven seats. The old Congress was 45 Republicans with 53 Democrats and two independents. So with the seven, we're currently at 52 Republicans, but there are a number of seats that are still undecided that are likely to go Republican. Like, for instance, there's the runoff in Louisiana that Mary Landrieu is almost certainly going to lose. And so that one's going to go Republican, too.
So that would be
53. And there are a couple others that I guess are just haven't been called yet.
Virginia, which I think the Democrat is ahead, so that would still leave him 53. And Alaska, which looks like it's going to go for the Republicans, so they're probably going to wind up with 54.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but it's not just that people are surprised at the straight out numbers, but also the margins in the, you know, there were races that people expected to be close that were not close. The Republican won him easily. Now, one of the things that...
Now, of course, the one thing about these... versus turnout
Let me get this one thing out that I want to say. Cause,
yeah, go ahead.
What I was looking for was, did... You know, in 2012, like I said, the pattern I saw was not a bias towards Republicans, was not a bias towards Democrats. It was a bias towards showing races to be closer than they were. Which, yeah, if you average it all out... looks actually like it was a bias towards Republicans in 2012 because, you know, the Republicans were
lost.
Yeah, right. Because the Republicans lost. So it was, you know, biased towards Republicans to make it look closer if you average it out over all states. But if you look at how the bias changed based on how far ahead or behind the candidate was, you could see that it was actually pushing things towards the middle. I haven't finished... making my, I was going to make a graph of this myself. I hadn't gotten around to finishing that yet, but I noticed a number of other people made essentially the same graph that I was going to, with maybe some minor differences, using the same data sources. And what you see there is, this time, it does not appear to be a bias towards being close. It appears to actually be, you know, giving Democrats more credit than they should have gotten across the board. I'm going to double check that myself just to be sure. But from what I've seen so far, everybody seems to agree that there was a fundamental, you know, all the polls seem to overestimate Democratic support by several percentage points. And 538 and others have, you know, compared this to previous years. And the amount that they were off on is in the ballpark of how far off polls have been in other election cycles. And if you look at going back election after election, sometimes they're biased towards Republicans, sometimes towards Democrats. It bounces back and forth. There doesn't seem to be a really significant pattern to it. Yes, Alex? I'm in the middle of something.
Daddy, please. Don't tell me why.
He's conspiring here.
Who's he conflating with?
He just took some trains, even though he's not supposed to have them. Anyway, because for those of you who didn't, you know, we before the show, he had to be coaxed out of my office, and because he wasn't being cooperative, he lost access to his trains for a couple hours. So he just came in. He's like really quiet, whispering, saying, "Don't tell Amy," and he grabs a couple trains and runs away. Anyway, they'll deal with that. What I was saying is that it doesn't seem like there was a general pattern. It's not like consistent bias one way or another.
Right.
But the problem this time was, it seems like all the pollsters, the bias was in the same direction. I've seen a little bit of analysis, and this gets to what you were about to mention, I think. It seems the place that they screwed up seems to be in the modeling of turnout.
That's what I was thinking.
And specifically... the turnout There was a nice graph. I think it was TPM or Vox or one of those guys that posted that looked at age distributions of turnouts over the last, you know, few elections. And what you see very consistently is that on presidential election years, the percentage of voters who are younger is much higher
than in this election.
And it drops on all the off-year elections.
Absolutely.
But it dropped even more significantly this year than other times. And basically, what you had is the actual turnout this election was a lot fewer young people than were expected based on looking at the last, not looking at 2012, but looking at the last off year, 2010, a lot fewer younger voters and a lot more older voters. And the result of that, based on, you know, the current trends, is that's a good turnout for Republicans.
Republicans, absolutely. No doubt about it.
And I've seen all kinds of Democrats tearing out their hair saying, you know, if only we could get our people to actually come out and fucking vote, we would win all the time.
I don't think that's the case. Look, I think that there is certainly, even if you look at the polling that showed it was closer, it still showed the Republicans were ahead.
Oh yeah, I mean, some people were gloating about all these models being wrong, and I'm like, you know,
no, they weren't. They were wrong about the margin. They weren't wrong about the outcome. Okay, all right. So let's not get too crazy here. Okay.
Well, and also, as we've been hammering through all the time, you know, most of the predictions had been moving closer and closer to the Republicans in the run up to the election. By the time we talked last week, you know, they were all pretty much at 60-40 for the Republicans. By the day before the election, they had all moved more towards more like 75-25. And a couple of them, I noticed, like NBC had moved to like 90% Republican or something in their model. And but all of these cases, you know, when you're dealing with probabilities, you know, one result doesn't validate what you want one way or another. And that's, of course, one of the problems with these models. In order to get a good idea of their validity, you have to back test them against previous elections or whatever.
Where's the last one?
I don't know where it is. It's somewhere in here. Look around on the floor. So if you're saying there's a 70-30 chance, it's not like. And I saw one person criticizing one of the modelers because a month out they were giving more like 50-50 odds, and they were like, ha 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 ha. And it's like, well, by the time of the election, that had moved considerably. And, you know, were they overstating, you know, that the Democrats still had a 25% chance of winning? I don't know. Like, you look at the result and say, well, this was a complete blowout. Well, and the reason it was a blowout was because the polls ended up biased in this direction. Well, if the polls had been biased by the same amount in the other direction, things would have looked potentially very differently. And that's what these odds are taking into account. So you can't say it turned out to be a blowout, therefore the people who said it was 60-40 odds were wrong. You know, the people who said it was 60-40 odds said that the chances were that this is what was going to happen, you know, or there was you got to interpret the stats wrong. And I don't understand the gloating about this. I mean, everybody agreed that the Republicans were probably going to win. This was not a surprise. The only people who were, the fact that they took over the Senate was not a surprise. However, everybody, including the people who own these models, have been surprised by the extent of the victory, both in terms of margins and the numbers. Like, you know, they were thinking like, okay, the Republicans are probably going to take it, but it's going to be close. They're going to have like 51 seats or something like that. As you said, we're inching up on 45 or 54. You know, it wasn't just that. It's also the governor's races went disproportionately to the Republicans. State legislatures went disproportionately to the Republicans. Almost every kind of race that was going on, the Republicans ended up with an advantage this time around and bigger than people expected, which is why, you know, the Democrats are in shock right now, because they didn't just lose. They got hammered. They lost badly. And they're licking their wounds and trying to figure out why and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I think this is, you know, and they should be. They should be. However, you got to be careful not to overstate it, because as everyone has said, this map looked bad for the Republicans, for the Democrats from the beginning. And, you know, they just were not going to be in a good position. It was always a stretch, you know, for them to pull this off this time. And that's bad no matter what. But, you know, it is the norm in off year elections for the president's party to lose.
To lose. And that's happened. I mean, geez, if anybody remember this election for Bush in the previous administration, in his sixth year, my God, I mean, the Republicans got absolutely crushed. They lost both the House and the Senate. OK, and in that election. So, yeah, I mean, it's just is. And I mean, and look, let's face it. It's not like the Democrats did anything in the last, especially in the last 13 months to win this damn election.
Well, I mean, and to the contrary, really? they've been screwing things up. I mean, when we did our prediction show at the end of last year, you know, my prediction was basically status quo. Nothing's going to change. It's going to be approximately the same, plus or minus a few seats. You know, Senate's not going to change hands. You know, we're basically going to be in the same place. But since then, The Democrats, you know, first of all, the Republicans have been fairly well disciplined and organized. They didn't nominate a bunch of yahoos for most of these positions. They instead nominated people who had experience and were reasonable candidates who could appeal to the center. And the Democrats have been, you know, a disorganized mess, as they often are.
I don't think the discipline of like nominating candidates or like running an election machine, it was a problem. I think it was far more of like just giving the Republicans ran a campaign that was basically, let's just say, how they suck. Yes. And Obama kept giving them just every fucking ammunition for them to make it real, even though the economy was improving, even though employment was going good, even though all of this shit was going on. The reality is that, you know, they just kept, I mean, Jesus, why don't you just fucking just hand it to them in a silver platter? Do every fuck up in the book, you know?
In the meantime, the Republicans didn't fuck up.
Right. They didn't do do anything positive, but they didn't do anything negative. Whereas the fucking Democrats, I mean, Obama just kept like just fucking like slipping and fucking on a banana peel every fucking chance he could get, for God's sakes. And I mean, I will say this. Now, for the election standpoint, I will say this. The Democrats also fucked up because everybody kept acting like, I don't want Obama campaigning for me, yep. Which I think was a major league mistake. Because having Obama campaigning, hey, if you want turnout, he is the guy who's going to bring you your fucking base to turn out. And you decided not to bring him out. Not to pull him out. Fuck the other people. Those people that weren't going to vote for him, that were going to vote against for him, they were going to vote against them anyway. But you needed fucking turnout. And what you did was shit that would not pull turnout. Okay? So, that I think was
and people have talked all along, and this is one of the things factoring into a bunch of these models and the predictions we were talking about, is that, you know, on the Republican side, you have people very passionate. They hate Obama. They want to stick it to Obama. They hate the Democrats, and they're going to take advantage of whatever they can. And, you know, even if they don't like their particular candidate, they need to vote the Republican and do this, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, the Democrats, you know, are disillusioned. They're unhappy with Obama. They're like, And so you didn't have that sort of motivation. And, you know, right. The Democrats completely failed to motivate their own folks.
Ace!
Like you said, yeah. both in terms of giving them anything positive to turn out for. They failed utterly at that because, you know, these folks have been disappointed at what the Democrats have not been able to accomplish, the things the Democrats have not done, because, you know, for the liberal base, you know, they're just not seeing the kinds of change they wanted. And meanwhile, they also completely failed at doing the other thing, which is motivate people where if you don't show up, these guys are going to take over and that's going to be bad. They didn't do either thing really well.
They didn't do either one. And, you know, and let's not forget the policy failures that or just incompetence parts. I mean, for example, I mean, come on. How much did it help the whole Obamacare rollout? Listen, President Obama had really good approval ratings all throughout 2013 until that clusterfuck. Okay, all right? And that clusterfuck really drove down President Obama's
approval ratings. And then we had that, and then we had Syria, and then we had ISIS, and then we had Ebola, and then we had...
I mean, it was like one after the other, after the other, after the other. It was like, which thing couldn't you fuck up one after the other? Okay,
And these are also things that, by the way, like in some, you know, we certainly have argued about what the right action was in various of these things, and in some cases we agree with what Obama's done, and some things he hasn't. But one thing that's consistently been true is whether you agree with the policy that Obama has actually taken on or not, he's done an absolutely horrible job explaining and defending and what he's doing. And,
oh, yeah.
And making sure.
Which one was the one that he went like said that we have no strategy? Do you remember
that
this?
That was around ISIS. Yeah.
Oh my God! That was like, oh my God! I mean, that one was like brutal. It was brutal. Good Lord! I mean, so yeah. I mean, it was just a horrible year. I mean, it was a horrible year. But understand something. The thing is that a lot of people went out there and just voted. I mean, the Republicans, like I said, they ran a campaign. They didn't run for anything. Can you tell me what the fuck they were running for other than the Keystone Pipeline?
Yeah,
because I'm just like, I'm trying to figure out.
Well, I'll be honest.
What the fuck they're for?
You are obviously in a swing state with all kinds of stuff going on. I guess mainly in the governor's side, but
oh my God, yes.
But you know, there was nothing super. You know, here, you know, there was no Senate race. The House race, it was pretty much, you know, no one expected any upsets there. The incumbent was going to win. The Democratic incumbent was going to win, at least in my district, and I think most of the districts around here. And you know, I don't watch much live TV anymore, so I wasn't seeing commercials. So I'm like, there's a campaign going on? I don't even know. You know, I don't know what's going on. Blissfully ignorant, other than the kinds of stuff we talk about here. Whereas, you know, in places where you are, like you said, you've been bombarded.
Oh, my God, by email TV. I mean, you know, I go, for example, I mean, I will tell you where I could see the most of them. You know, I go to the gym to work out all the time. So they got the TVs going on with the stuff. Good Lord. I mean, it was like one after the other, after the other, after the other of these campaign commercials. And man, I mean, they were like brutal. I mean, they were just, and I saw one of the debates. I mean, the debates were brutal. I mean, it was like, you know, and I was reading the local paper, and I mean, you know, they were like, listen, even the Miami Herald, which usually leans Democratic, okay, all right? I mean, they said, listen, we are going into this election by just holding our nose. Because picking between either these two guys, for the love of God, have you seen this campaign? They said, we are going to vote for Charlie Crist, but good Lord. I mean, we're really, the only reason we're doing it is because he's just less slimy than the other guy. That's it. Well, I mean, if that's the best endorsement you can do, good God almighty.
And of course, he had the whole changing parties thing going on, which is a little weird.
That part wasn't that crazy. I mean, it wasn't that he changed parties. I mean, he lost. The Republicans went, and he lost the primary in like 4 years ago.
Right.
Okay. And then he wound up running as an independent. So it was a little bit like a whole mess, and everybody kept like, you know, so there was a little bit of
One person tweeted that now that he's lost as a Republican and lost as a Democrat, he's going to be registering as a Whig next.
Well, there you go. That could be an option. But I don't know. I mean, it's just... But I keep thinking, okay, great. It's what I'm saying. Okay, beautiful. The Republicans won. Now what? What the fuck are they going to do? Because okay, I have no idea what the hell they're doing.
Let's dive into that in just a second. But let's take a break. And we'll come back and we'll talk about implications of 2014 for policy, for what's going on, things like that. And then we'll do 2016 after that. Back after this. Okay, so, implications for 2016, what the Republican governing agenda is going to be.
Right.
And you were saying you have no idea.
I have no idea. Other than the Keystone Pipeline, this is the only thing I heard. Oh, yeah, we're going to pass Keystone.
Well, okay, I've heard effort, you know, obviously they want to do stuff with Obamacare. They want to repeal it, but they may not actually be able to repeal it through a veto.
They can't repeal it.
Right, because they'd have to overcome a veto.
And they don't have enough votes.
But there has been some talk of, well, maybe they actually can, you know, push something through on some of the specific things they're intending to, they object the most about. Maybe they can find some bipartisan places to compromise with Obama to improve this thing.
So the whole Obamacare thing, right. Okay,
so there's
great.
Obamacare.
Okay, great. So maybe they can get a couple of things passed to modify Obamacare, and they'll get the Keystone Pipeline through. Okay, now what? Because they keep talking about, we're now going to get the nation working!
Well,
and I'm this year, there's been like, I don't know, 2 million jobs created this year.
Here's the fundamental question that the Senate and House leadership are going to have to decide, and which will become clear probably over the next couple months. Obviously, the new Congress doesn't actually take office till January, and we have a lame duck session between now and then. As we get towards January and February, it'll start to become clear which approach they're taking. The two possible approaches here are, one, the Republicans could decide, hey, we have to show that we actually can govern, and so therefore, we're actually going to look for things that we can actually get common ground with the Democrats on and pass that won't be vetoed by Obama, and see if we can actually get some things done that are, you know, maybe not everything we want, but are moving things in the direction that we like as opposed to the other direction. And so that when we get to 2016, we can trumpet a series of accomplishments that we did this, we did that, we did this, and they made your life better in these ways. That's approach number one. Approach number two is say, fuck all that. We're going to use the fact that we have majorities in both parties and pretty strong party discipline, unlike the Democrats, and we're going to pass a whole bunch of things that represent, you know, our, you know, ideal. This is the way we really want to get things done.
Let me correct you.
We're going to repeal Obamacare entirely. Blah 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 blah, and then just let Obama veto everything, and not worry about the fact that we don't have the votes to override it. And then go on the platform of, we tried to do X Y Z Q, and Obama and the Democrats stopped us at every turn.
Number one, they have party discipline on maybe one and two things, but they don't have that much party discipline.
They
That's
have,
been proven.
They have a lot more than the Democrats have. I mean, you're right. Both parties.
Okay, do you recall? I'm sorry.
Oh, yes, the shutdowns and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing to remember on those.
What?
That was a situation where what actually happened, and you're right in that the leadership couldn't make the party do what they wanted to on those. But the leadership was able to get what the leadership wanted. They did have to use the Democrats. Okay, I see your point.
They could. It was a clusterfuck.
And then
let me tell you the other one that was a clusterfuck. We thought we had an immigration deal, remember?
Yes.
What happened with the party discipline and the Republicans about getting that thing through?
So maybe
that just imploded.
Maybe the word to use here isn't discipline, in that it's not that the leadership can force their troops to do what they want. It's that as a caucus, they are a lot more cohesive than the Democrats. So they're able to unanimous or close to unanimous votes on their stuff on more issues.
Now you used the right word. On certain core issues. There was a graph. I don't know if you – did you share – I shared a graph on Twitter this week. And I think – I don't know if it was – did you share it? I can't remember where the source was originally one. It showed – it was a graph that showed that the positions of Republicans versus positions of Democrats, depending on the district where they were.
We actually talked about this last week, and I actually added something in after we recorded the show on this, because I realized I went back and looked at that article, and I don't think the case is as strong as it actually is, because the score they were using to make that graph wasn't an even-handed nonpartisan score like DW Nominate. It was a progressive issues score that was all about issues that are important to Democrats. And so
what I think it showed is like that the Republicans, even on those issues specific, and if we talk about those issues, speaking about that, you can see that Democrats, you see Democrats, for example, and I see certain Democrats that are even like pro-life, or they're all over the place or whatever on it. I think I see Republicans like in a lot of issues, like, for example, that, I mean, look, they on those core issues, they toe the party line. That's
right.
We're not going to deviate. We don't deviate.
Just to be clear, it probably is a good case to be made of the Republicans being more cohesive ideologically than the Democrats at the moment. However, all I was saying is I looked at that particular study with the graphs we talked about last week, and I don't think you can draw the conclusion just from that. Actually does show a slope both for the Republicans and Democrats. It's just more flattened for the Republicans.
It's more flattened for the Republicans.
Perfectly explainable because the score they used was one that was designed to differentiate between Democrats on how liberal they are. So of course all the Republicans are going to be at the bottom of that scale. So it compresses that view. And if you did a similar study using one of the scores that's based for conservatives, you might see an opposite pattern. And to really come to a real conclusion about this.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
To really come to a real conclusion about this, you have to use one of the sort of more nonpartisan things like DW Nominate. Now, I believe there have been views of DW Nominate that do show something along these lines, but not as clearly. I think that particular set of graphs we were looking at was actually, you know, it was a Democratic. The score was one that was designed to identify Democrats to primary.
Bottom line, I think the one thing that I'm saying about this is that, look, there are a couple of core issues where I see that the Republicans is like everything great. Maybe they can pass something on. But the problem gets to like the issues where things aren't as clear cut. For example, like tax reform. Okay, all right. Because one of the things that I see, for example, is you got a lot of people like trying to do certain trade-offs and exchanges regarding tax reform, for example. I don't see how they are able to pass a cohesive package that would do these goals that they keep talking about, like reducing the deficit, but like maintaining that core value of like we raise no taxes. Okay, all right, and all this other stuff. I mean, I see that. I don't see how they do anything regarding that. The other part that they have an issue is this whole thing about immigration reform. There's a whole bunch of pro-business Republicans that want immigration reform, and you've got a core group of people that just don't.
Right.
And so I mean, I don't, you know, I don't see, you know, I don't see. I mean, I'm trying to figure out. Okay. Aside, forget about, okay, great. They're going to try to pass a bill to repeal Obamacare. That bullshit. Okay. What would they do fundamentally that we could say, here, we did this, that they would pass, and that they could ride a wave of that to the next election? What is it?
I don't know yet.
I don't know either. I can't come up with it.
You know, and we have been hearing a lot of noise, no specifics yet, but, you know, I mentioned the two approaches, either do bipartisan stuff that can actually get past the president, or just do stuff that you know isn't going to get past the president, but push it through the Congress so that you can say, you know, Democrats are stopping this, either through the filibuster process or, you know, we've shown you can do the nuclear option and get rid of the filibuster if you feel like it. And there's been a lot of noise from McConnell and some of the other folks who are going to be taking over the leadership that they're making noise about the first approach, about doing the bipartisan stuff. I don't know if that's going to last. I don't know if that's actually
going to
happen.
I don't know if that's going to last either.
Or more likely, I think they're going to pass things that they say are bipartisan, blah, 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 but really are stuff that include poison pills that the Democrats are never going to be able to agree to.
Right.
You know, and so you end up in the second scenario, even if you have some frilly stuff on top of it that makes it so they can try to say it's bipartisan and maybe they get, you know, one or two Democrats to sign on to one or two things. I don't know. I mean, and honestly, the Democrats did the same kind of thing before, you know, they, as well. I mean, this is not an unusual thing. But the other thing that'll be interesting to see is, you know, the Republican strategy over the last few years has been obstruct absolutely everything. Don't let anything happen. Don't let the Democrats get any wins whatsoever. Do the Democrats end up taking the same type of approach and become completely and totally obstructionist in the Senate? And you know, maybe force the Republicans to do nuclear option kind of stuff, or do the Democrats do what they usually do, which is do a lot of protesting, but not actually, you know, not the same level of obstructionism that the Republicans have done. And I don't know which way that's going to go at this point. I suspect the Democrats are not going to be as effective as obstruction as the Republicans have been. But of course, they don't need to be because Obama can veto things.
Yes, exactly. And the other thing is that I will say, if I had to gamble, I'm not gambling on I'm not gambling on the Republicans being cooperative and like doing anything in these last 2 years of the frickin' administration. I just don't see it.
Well, I will be surprised. I've been doing these updates, and I will continue to do them through the next Congress, of, you know, number of laws passed, blah blah blah, which is a bad metric in a number of ways, but whatever. It's interesting to look at.
It's an interesting metric.
I would be shocked if the next Congress ends up passing any more laws than either of the last two. It's going to be roughly the same. I mean, we're not, you know, nothing significant's going to get done. It's just going to trudge along. There'll be showboating on this issue or that issue, but we're not going to see, you know, significant legislation passed in the Congress and signed by Obama, in the absence of some, you know, major, let's, you know, ISIS attacks us and we're all going to agree to go attack them back.
I think I'm going to I'm gonna get them to pass a bill to do one of the two, either to ban the name Abel's May or to honor a day of Abel's May.
There,
I'm not sure which, But I'm going to talk to my congressman and see if we can get
something. Well, the one thing they tend to agree on fairly easily and pass laws on every session is naming post offices.
I know. So post office.
I want a post office.
You want a post office?
I don't think I want any of the write-in elections that I you know, this time around. Although I think I might have gotten like as many as 4 votes, so I'm excited. But
whoa! Well,
but yeah, I don't think I won. So given that I didn't win any elections, I think the next thing is how about a post office?
I like the post office idea. I think that sounds like a great idea.
It doesn't have to be a big post office.
Okay, no. I hear you.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So
name. Okay. All right. I got that. That's something else for my list of to-dos.
Yeah, you get right on that.
Yeah, I'll get right on that. Okay. All right. Good.
So the one thing that I think should not go unsaid here, though, we've been talking almost exclusively about the Senate, and we do need to move on to other things, but it may actually be even more significant in the long run, the Republican gains in governor's offices and in state legislatures, because this is one area where really over the last 20 years, but continuing this election, the Republicans have been very focused, sort of in a not super visible behind the scenes kind of way, of winning over state legislatures and starting sort of from the ground up of building, winning these little races that, you know, nobody pays a lot of attention to their state legislator races. You know, so they put people in, they do some whatever, they put efforts into these campaigns that, you know, are typically ignored by users, by the public, and they win a few of them, and they win a little bit more each time. And so I was just seeing a flashing
by. I still don't understand why the proportion and the numbers that they are getting. I mean, I'm just thinking just gerrymandering, because to most extent, because, well, for example, a state like Florida, which has, you know, let's face it, we wound up with like a vote for a governor that the margin was like less than 1% between a Democrat and a Republican. Okay, all right. I mean, I don't understand how it winds up, even though that's the case, that,
well,
that the Republicans have super majorities in basically both the House and the Senate.
Well, let me talk. There are a few things here. One. Yeah, gerrymandering type stuff may have something to do with it, but I've seen numbers of studies that say, you know, the influence of that is overstated. It is a factor, but it's been overstated in the past. So that's one thing. But I think a lot of it really is like, look, on the local races, you know, the partisan label people pay a lot less attention to, because, you know, you're not talking about war and peace, you're not talking about global economy, you're not talking about this and that, you're talking about things like, you know, do you put a stoplight on your street? Or, you know, I mean, obviously state legislator has a few other issues like state education policy and things like that.
Right.
But it's less charged with the same sort of partisan atmosphere that we see on the national level. And so people are a lot more willing to say, you know, okay, I'm not even going to look at Republican, Democrat. I'm going to look at who seems like a nice guy and who, you know, or if I know anything about them at all, for God's sake. And so you do that, and because people will be saying, what are the issues in the state race? I was looking at some of the ballot descriptions when I was doing my voting on Tuesday. And, you know, they're all like, we're in favor of a good economy. We're in favor of bringing jobs to the community. We're in favor of education. And they're all like this, Republican, Democrat, whoever. How the hell can you tell the difference? They're all just like this, you know, vague, we like good things kind of comments for the most part. And so... Now, behind the scenes, what happens is, okay, you vote for this Republican, you vote for that Democrat, and it doesn't seem like it makes that big of a difference on the case of any individual legislator you're voting for. However, once they get there, the parties are organized, they do have issues that they think about that are have more national implications. They're building the farm team to later win governorships and senators and representatives and things like that. And the Republicans have been very, and also the Republicans have just been very, very good at paying attention to this stuff. And this started actually, I guess the moral majority or whatever in the '80s, this was their strategy, and it's built from there, where they're like, look, it's hard to win a Senate race. It's hard to win a presidential race, but you know, it doesn't cost all that much money to contest a state Senate race. And if the other guy's not really paying attention, we can win a few of these. And then you just build on that over time. And they've been building on that for years and years and years now. And so now we've got, if you look at, you know, a state and local level stuff across the country, the Republicans have made incredible gains all over the place. And what you're starting to see is that then showing fruits in sort of state level policy issues, and it eventually trickles to the national stuff too, and so you are seeing potentially and especially with the federal government in a gridlock situation, that means that what the states decide to do actually becomes a lot more important. And so this may be an incredibly smart strategy on the part of the Republicans. And meanwhile, just to give that paying attention kind of thing, one of the things I saw fly by on Twitter, and I didn't retweet it or anything, apologies, was looking at how much the National Democratic Party spent on things. The National Democratic Party spent hundreds of millions of dollars on the Senate races, only to get completely blown out. By comparison, they spent almost nothing on these legislative races that, you know, might. And meanwhile, the Republicans are cleaning up there, too. And, you know, maybe they should have proportioned that money a bit differently and actually spent some time thinking about these local races as well.
No, I agree. You know, I mean, I will say that I haven't looked at the numbers that deeply in terms of how much they're spending on the local state races and how much of that is a factor. You know, I kept seeing it more as a I looked at it as a very big, like, rural to urban divide, mm-hmm. in which, especially because of way that Senate votes are built, because the Senate logic to a state is very similar to state Senate versus, you know, the U.S. Senate, which is based on numbers. It doesn't mean population. You know, you have a tendency in states like Florida, for example, where the population may be tilting substantially Democrat, but you wind up with the Republicans having control of the seats, and then you wind up with the election being on an off year, for example. We were talking about turnout, right? When you got a governor that won by about 60,000 votes, okay? You're probably talking, if the election was on the not on the off year, but it was in the presidential year, that guess what? Probably the Democrat would have won.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that there's a lot of factors around this that I don't know. I think for whatever reason, especially because of, you know, a lot of the elements between urban and, you know, urban and rural divides that we have between the parties, that they tend to favor the Republicans in the states.
Well, and the urban-rural thing is something that there have been – yeah, numbers of looks at this that, you know, more so than red state, blue state, anything like that. If you really look at it, the divide we have in this country is urban versus rural.
Absolutely.
And that's, you know, cities are Democratic, non-cities are Republican, and it's a very clear pattern almost countrywide.
Across the U.S.
And you know, this shows up in various different ways depending on how, you know, those two are balanced in any particular state and districting and all that. There was something, I think it was the Daily Show a couple weeks ago, looking at, they were in Austin, Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And Austin, Texas is a highly Democratic enclave within very Republican Texas. Right. However, if you look at the House of Representatives from the city of Austin, they have five Republicans.
Right.
And why is that? It's because there are five congressional districts that occupy part of the city of Austin, all of which take a tiny slice of Austin and then a huge bit of the countryside.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the Democratic votes from Austin are split through these five congressional districts and can't muster a majority in any of them. Whereas if you did have some redistricting, if you gave Austin an actual district of their own, it would be a clear Democratic district. You know, but, you know, that's not how it works.
But it goes back to the gerrymandering I was mentioning to a certain extent. And by the way, here's another thing that I didn't realize. So we're talking about turnout in off years and on years and talking about why, you know, Republicans are taking the states. You know, I'm looking at most of the governors are 4-year terms. Okay, yeah. Right. So, okay, the United States. I'm looking at that 37 out of the 50 governorships in the United States are done in off years.
Yep.
That, like we mentioned, also gives the edge to the Republicans. Unless the Democrats go and get more turnout in these off years, there's no freaking way to break that cycle.
You know, I think there's a clear solution to this.
Mm.
2-year terms for presidents.
I was actually going to say the opposite. I will say
4-year for representatives.
I think that representatives will go to frickin' 4 years. I think it is really draining on America to be going on this.
And you might as well give senators, like, you know, 20-year terms or something, because that's what they effectively get anyway.
Give them 8.
Yeah.
Why not? Go to 4 and 8. No, I think, I'm sorry, but it is so draining to be on a constant election cycle.
You'd still have all the states doing things in off-year, too. Like, if you think the mid-year ones are bad, the local races that are in between those, you know, like the 2015 elections, like, or the 2013 elections, they just have a smattering of local stuff, you know.
I know.
Nobody votes for those.
Oh, fuck. I forget that they happen, for God's sakes. I get that. But I will tell you this. Look, Puerto Rico did all the elections for every post every 4 years, period. It didn't matter what the fuck it was. Senate, House, governor, mayor, everything. Everything was 4 years, all in the same election. You know, and you didn't have this shit, okay? Now, I'm not saying Puerto Rico, I'm talking politically. I mean, that made it a lot more convenient. I'm not saying to Puerto Rico by any way. Puerto Rico's a fucking basket case, so I'm not gonna say that. But at least politically, for God's sakes, I found that a lot easier. Okay, all right. I would love everything on just a force. It would just be a lot easier. But anyway, mm-hmm. All right. Let's put it this way. We can't agree on fucking immigration reform, for God's sakes. I really highly doubt that anybody's going to go to agree to such a massive change like I'm proposing.
Well, the thing is, as you identified, I mean, right now, the scheduling benefits Republicans. So there's no incentive for the Republicans to agree to any change in schedule.
Not at all. Not by any stretch.
Yeah. And meanwhile, there are other changes of, I'm sure, that would benefit Democrats, like, that's for instance, right, what you're suggesting. And so, that's why, you know, people talk about it all the time about getting rid of the Electoral College. But any change to anything about the structure of elections, whether it be when they're held, whether it's the Electoral College, whether it's districting, whatever, all of these things are places where any change shakes things up, creates a lot of unknown, will cause significant numbers of the people that are currently in power to be hurt. And so those kinds of changes just typically don't happen because there's enough entrenched interests that favor the status quo that, you know, changing anything substantial like that is always a big, it's very difficult to do things like that. You basically have to have some sort of implosion that makes people realize, oh yeah, we have to do this.
Implosion!
And it has to be a fairly significant one. Like, you know, we had 2000 and the Electoral College didn't disappear after that. You know, I've said before, like, what would it take to get rid of the Electoral College? Like 3 or 4 elections in a row where the popular vote winner did not win, and where it was both parties affected by that loss, where they both felt screwed, then maybe you'd get something like that. But even then, you'd have to convince, you know, you know, you'd have to convince some of the states that are swing states right now that it's okay to, like, oh, it's okay. We don't want all the people paying attention to us every 4 years, you know. Anyway, let's take a break. And let's just do some quick 2016 stuff and then wrap it up. We'll be back after this.
Information.
Okay, here we are.
Here we are. Here we are.
That's lovely.
We are. Oh, sorry. We're back. Okay.
We're back. So 2016. You know, as I said, I finally officially launched my 2016 analysis stuff. Obviously, for those of you who have been following me closely on Twitter or elsewhere, you know, I've been sort of doing this stuff behind the scenes almost for 2 years now, collecting data, putting things together, slowly building out the website. Over the last couple weeks, I did sort of a burst of activity to get everything done and put together and blah, blah, blah. And on Wednesday, the day after the 2014 elections, I posted 4 blog posts officially kicking things off, saying that the site was there, giving a tour of the features, a little FAQ on some things about it, and the first actual analysis that I've posted based on these the early polling in states. So just to summarize the bottom line there, Hillary's way ahead at the moment against all of the major Republicans that they've been polling against. However, the thing to remember is that that's completely to be expected, given her name recognition, the lack of name recognition of the others, the fact that nobody's really paying much attention yet, the fact that you know, they haven't really, there's been a little bit, but they haven't really fully ramped up the attacks against Clinton yet. And we do expect a little bit of a sort of just a structural advantage to the Democrats based on where all these states have been over the last few election cycles. But Clinton is actually running ahead of that significantly. Like, where she is better than the average of the last 5 presidential elections by a significant margin. But I speculated where we are right now may very well be at or near Hillary's peak. Because from here on out, you can expect that she's going to be attacked all the time. You can expect that the Republicans are going to start getting out there and getting more visible and defining themselves to the public a bit more. So you'll get more people, you know, that when someone asks about, you know, Huckabee or somebody, you know, says, oh yeah, I know about Huckabee, as opposed to who? You know, and you know, obviously those of us who pay attention, we know Rand Paul, we know Bush, we know Christie, we know Paul Ryan, we know Huckabee. But you know, just normal off the street person who doesn't pay much attention, you know, they probably heard the name, maybe they've heard the name, but they don't know anything. And that's all going to start changing. And it's going to start happening really fast. I mean, there've been stuff in the news just last couple weeks about people, a certain group of people, encouraging to Hillary to get out of the gate quick. Like, you know, the 2014 elections are over. Go ahead and announce officially. Everybody knows you're running, so make it official. Don't wait till like March or something, you know, or even.
Oh, I think that's idiotic. I think she needs to wait for this whole fucking like clusterfuck to just settle down for a little bit.
And that's you know, a bunch of other people responded to that, because like there were people saying she should just announce tomorrow. And then there are a bunch of people saying no, wait. You know, so
no, she should wait until this whole fucking clusterfuck dies down and then announce. I see no advantage whatsoever to announcing like right now.
I'm thinking January.
January, yeah, January's fine. You know, but like right now, it's just idiotic.
Yeah, and you know, but we're gonna start seeing things for real. I mean, you've already seen like you know, Rand Paul was on Twitter, you know, after the election results, and you know, a lot of what he was talking about was Hillary. You know, there were a lot of interviews that were where people are, you know, well, what's going on with 2014? Well, here are the implications of 2014 to Hillary. You know, this is a big blow to Hillary, and it's like, okay, but you know, but you're going to start seeing all kinds of that. You know, they're going to the attacks left, right, and center on Hillary are going to you know, accelerate. You're going to see the sniping in between the Republicans are going to accelerate as well. You know, we're going to get into it for real. I mean, we're right now it's all very, very theoretical. What I said on the blog post is there is one place you can see maybe. Some evidence. One of the most highly polled states right now is North Carolina. And in the North Carolina graph, and I emphasize only really in the North Carolina graph, this is the only place where you can clearly see this pattern. You know, Hillary seems peaked earlier in 2014, and there's been a consistent move back towards the Republicans since then. And is that a pattern that's going to develop in more places? Maybe. I kind of think it probably will. I kind of think that we're going to see this move more towards the Republicans before we see anything else happening. But that's somewhat speculation. We'll see how it shakes out. It is very, very early. Right now, the situation is that Hillary has a huge advantage coming in, but nobody's really started to do all that much of anything. And so I expect that once we do get into this, this will get closer rather than further away. That's my own gut feeling, but we'll see. That's the starting point. That's where we are. And I don't know any of this, like, what's the implications of 2014 to the presidential race? Maybe
usually there are not a lot.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Maybe there are some. And, you know, part of it is going to be what noise does the Republican Congress end up making over the next couple years? And how does, you know, Hillary take a stand on that? How much does she associate with herself with Obama, or how much does she run away? Everyone's, of course, expecting her to run away from Obama because Obama's so unpopular right now. But fundamentally, the structure, I mean, when we were talking about some of these things in terms of House races, Senate races, presidential, the way the presidential race is structured is fundamentally different than the way the House or Senate work. And the who has the advantages are different. I mean, right now, you know, if you try to look at structural advantages, it looks very much like the Republicans have a structural advantage in the Congress. Because of the way districts are, the way things are laid out, the way the races went, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, it looks like the Democrats have a structural advantage on the Electoral College. Now, that's not enough to say, well, Republicans can't win. Obviously, Republicans can win the Electoral College. But right now, because of the distribution of states where the Republicans tend to be stronger in a lot of smaller states, where the Democrats are stronger in a small number of bigger states, you end up with the Democrats essentially having a head start in the Electoral College when you begin. It's not such a structural difference that, you know, anything's a done deal. We got a lot of got a lot of politics to happen in the next 2 years. A lot of events to happen in the next 2 years. The map may look very different a year from now, let alone 2 years from now. It'll be fun to watch. It's that season again. I'm getting excited.
It's that season again. Sam's getting tingly. What do you want me to tell you?
Well, last week you were tingly, so.
Yeah, I was, but now apparently you're. Anyway, all right.
I don't like talking about being tingly.
All right, so moving on from the tingly subject.
Is there anything else you wanted to bring up, or are we done?
Well, we didn't talk about the rockets blowing up, but.
Oh, yeah, the rockets blowing up.
They blew
up. They blew up. It sucked. In one case, it looks like the cause may be they used an old rocket engine. In the other, it's still unclear. There's possibly some pilot error involved, but there might be other things as well.
Wait a minute. I didn't hear that about the. I did hear about the pilot error, but what do you mean they used an old rocket engine?
Oh, the rocket engine in the rocket that blew up in Virginia. Was an old Soviet rocket, and by old Soviet rocket, they don't mean an old design. It was actually a rocket engine that was like 30 years old.
Why in God's name would they have used that?
Cheaper.
Well.
It's been a reliable thing in the past. It's been a reliable design in the past. But they basically got a used rocket engine off. Well, I guess it wasn't used, but they got an old rocket engine off the Russians, and apparently there was something wrong with it. But
okay, I thought they were building their own rockets instead of buying.
Well, they're building their own rockets, but they're assembling them out of parts that come from places.
So they assembled their own rocket, but used a 30-year-old, literally not design, literally a 30-year-old engine from the Russians?
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't really sound all that great.
Yeah.
Well, it sure as hell was a spectacular explosion. I will say that. That was pretty cool to see on video. Nobody got hurt.
Yeah, right. Nobody got hurt on that
nobody
one.
Nobody got hurt. Okay,
obviously, right, so. In Spaceship Two, one person died and another one seriously injured. But
okay, no, I'm not talking about that one. I'm just saying, the cargo ship going up in flames was just kind of very, very entertaining, to be honest with you. You know, expensive entertaining, but still entertaining nonetheless.
Yeah, I can see that. And anyway, in both of these cases, they're sort of fairly significant setbacks to the private space industry, but it's not going to stop anything. I mean,
somebody said that based on the current rate of failures like these, that if airplanes failed at this rate, there'd be 250 planes crashing a day on the ground,
right?
Something like that.
Well, the quote that everybody says is space is hard. This is still this is an important reminder that this is not stuff that is routine yet. This is stuff where there's still very much developing the technology, figuring things out. It's not a commonplace everyday occurrence yet. It is still experimental and risky, and and it's going to be that way for a while, but the way that it becomes, if you look at the very early days of aviation, a lot of planes did crash,
not 250 a day, but yes.
Well, but your 250 a day is out of how many millions of flights every day?
No. I don't know millions, but
a
lot.
Yeah, a lot of flights, whereas in the early days of aviation, and I'm talking, like in the 5 to 10 years after the Wright brothers, there were very few flights going on. It was hobbyists and rich people and the military, and there were lots and lots of accidents because they were still figuring this shit out. And, and admittedly, for space flight, it's been, quite a bit longer since we started the space program than, you know, 5 to 10 years. But the technology really is still in its infancy in terms of, you know, going through those cycles, because it has been a limited government endeavor for the most part. We're just seeing the private companies really getting into it in the last few years. And, you know, the way you get better and the way you figure these things out is you have the accidents and then you figure out what you did wrong and then you fix it and you make sure it doesn't happen again. And over time, you know, first you're eliminating the things that cause an accident 1 in 50 times, and then you're eliminating the things that cause accidents 1 in 100, and then 1 in 1,000, and then 1 in 1,000,000. And then, you know, after a number of iterations of this stuff, you end up with something that's fairly safe and reliable, but we're not there yet. This is still something where, you know, you do have failures and you have them on a regular basis. And, you know, it's actually, when you look at the manned space flights, for the space shuttle specifically, obviously they had the big accidents, but, you know, from those numbers, it worked out as something like, you know, you go up in a space shuttle, you have a 1 in 50 shot of not coming back.
Basically. Yeah.
You know, they'll work these things out. It's not going to, you know, Virgin Galactic is not going to go away. These other guys, Orbital or whoever they were, they're not going away. These efforts are going to continue. These efforts are going to accelerate. This is a setback. This will probably put them back, you know, a year or two in their plans. They'll get over it. You know, and I fully expect still that, you know, if you go out 20 years in the future, you're going to see tons and tons of, you know, commercial, non-governmental activity in space. It's just inevitable.
I expect that. And, you know, the technology will get better and, you know, cost less and so forth. And there's more people doing it actively, which usually when more people and more ideas get thrown at it, then the technology gets better and the cost comes down. So
yeah, I mean, and these first, you know, Virgin Galactic, you know, tickets for like 5 minutes in waitlessness were $250,000 or whatnot, and 700 people or so signed up. You know, you take it out 20, 30 years, that's going to be a lot cheaper. It's not necessarily going to be, you know, you decide to take the spaceship to work tomorrow, but, you know, it's going to be a lot more common. It's going to be, you know, on the order of, you know, somebody taking, you know, a premium first class ticket somewhere right now, you know, given enough time. Or maybe let's start with, you know, one of those, you know, Emirates Airlines suites or something like that. It's going to be like that first.
Well, they cost like about $30,000 round trip or something like that. Yeah, so, yeah, they're good expense. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
all right.
We'll get there.
All right. Okay. We're long.
Everybody for joining us.
Thank you.
Yet another Curmudgeon's Corner is done. We appreciate all our listeners. I still haven't checked. It's been like 9 months since I checked how many people listen to this show. I should do it again at some point.
Maybe we're down to zero and we haven't noticed. No, we know we're not.
There are a few people who occasionally comment. Yeah. But anyway. Thanks, everybody. We appreciate you. Tell your friends. As usual, we're on Twitter. I'm at Abelsmay. Yvonne is at IMBo. I'm also available by email, abelsmay@abelsmay.com. You can also comment on our shows. Every time we do a show, I do a post on my blog at abelsmay.com. You can add comments there. It's all fun. It's all fun. And we like hearing from you guys. In any case, that's it for this week, everybody. Have a good week. Stay healthy, unlike me. And we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.